Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. And this week's episode is very exciting because it is taking place aboard Last Knock Airlines.
Yeah.
Fly the unfriendly skies. And I think that is an actual tagline for some movie. But in any case, keeping with our weird pseudo-summary themes of some of our recent episodes, we're going to be talking about air travel in relation to horror.
Nice.
Some films that utilize the airplane, whether it's as like a primary setting or as a catalyst to a plot. You know, I was talking to Billy before the show. I couldn't come up with many out of my own collection, and I didn't check any lists prior to the show. So
I did.
Well, good. I'm glad someone was doing their work. I'm glad someone wasn't drunk at the cockpit. So
I am now, Johnny. It's going to be a great flight. I'm flying with Dean Martin from Airport 77.
Whoa, Dean, whoa.
Oh, man.
But in any case, Billy, before we get too entrenched in the frequent dire miles and all of that, you are not a fan of flying. Do you have a phobia of flying? And tell us about it.
I would say I do and did, and now it's manageable, but I fucking hate flying with a mad passion. I just despise it. No, I don't despise it. It's just like, it's a control issue, I guess. It's like, you know, if I'm driving a car, you know, and I get in an accident, that's one thing. But, you know, if the plane's going down, it's like, there's nothing you could do, you know, it's like, except scream, you know, scream and reach for the oxygen mask and hope, you know, a true horror doesn't take form. Yeah, I discovered it a long time ago in my first flight, and over the years through, I've tried everything and it didn't work. You know, drinking on a flight, my stomach just turned. Taking Xanax, that didn't do anything. Taking Xanax with wine didn't do anything. Benadryl, that helps. That's, you know, it usually knocks me out, but I'm flying and I'm pumped up a little bit, so it doesn't really work. Hypnotherapy didn't work. But Captain Stacy, I believe he's with United Airlines. He has an online program, and that really worked. And one of the things he said was, and you know, I studied a plane a lot because of it, and I watched every airline disaster. And I know that sounds sick, but it's like I want to figure out my phobia, and I want to, you know, figure out what to do to what all the sounds are like when I hear something, like, you know, so I don't freak out. And one of the things that he recommended was to go up to the flight crew before the flight, you know, while they're milling about waiting to board, and you introduce yourself and you let them know you have a fear of flying. And I'm like, oh man. So one flight I did, I went up to the co-pilot and I shook his hand, introduced myself. He's all smiles. And I told him, sorry, you know, don't freak out, but you know, I have a fear of flying. His whole face changed and he got really serious. And he said, you have a friend in the cockpit. And he even invited me to go visit the cockpit. But it really helped a lot. And I'm like, I got a friend in the cockpit, man. You know, he's like, you know, he wants to go home for dinner like anybody else. And I did it with the queen of the flight attendants on the one flight. And she said, what did you take? And I said, Xanax at the time. She said, oh, you should have taken Benadryl. And I was like, I knew it, you know. And so she was cool and she checked on me on occasion. Like when I went to Shriekfest to meet Denise Gossett and, you know, Bad Chop Suey 2 and all that stuff. Meet those wonderful people and Calvin, the gorilla producer, and Jonathan Chance. I had the best flight of my life. It was the best captain, the best ride, the best everything. I was awake the whole time, and it was very tolerable. So I've gotten much better over the years, but, you know, it's just, I hate it. I really do. I hate it.
Billy, you ever seen a grown man naked?
Man, I love the airplane movies, man.
You ever been in a Turkish prison, Billy?
Shut up, don't tell them.
Well, this is interesting, Bill, because I wasn't aware of this. Is this something they do on every flight where you can meet the captain?
They just go up to him.
Oh, okay, so you can say, hey, I'm not a frequent flyer or not a preferred flyer. can you help me?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, and another thing I hate about the airports is I fly so infrequently that every time I go to the airport, they expect you to know what to do with, like, everything. Like, even their airport, it's like, well, don't you realize it's down there? And I'm like, dude, I haven't flown in 2 years. You know, it's not like I do this every day. You could see by the way I'm dressed, I'm not a businessman on a trip during the week. So don't be a douchebag and think, you know what I mean? Just, like, friggin', I asked you a question. Give me an answer out of, you know, professional, you know, customer service based, you know, thinking instead of like, well, you should know where it is. Like, dude, I'm like, I don't work here. I don't know what gate. You like, help me out, man. You know? So.
My name is Billy Crash and I've got important Misfits business to tend to. Look at the shirt, man.
Yeah, man. Read the shirt. Piece of shit.
I ain't no goddamn son of a bitch. Well, you know, that's interesting, Bill, because I kind of got that impression, too, because I recently flew to Iceland. And,
yeah, you did, man. Lucky bastard.
And, you know, I guess I was a bit spoiled, but it was paid for spoiled because, you know, I did it through AAA and it was a group tour and everything. Mm-hmm. So I guess it wasn't as stressful as it could have been because it had been 3 years since I'd been on a plane. But before that, it had been even longer. I don't really have an issue with necessarily being afraid of being up in the air. I can see what you're saying about the lack of control and, you know, hey, if, I don't know, there are four engines on a plane, if three of them experience problems, you're pretty, you know, you might be fucked.
Well, there's usually two engines now, so if you lose one, but if you lose hydraulic pressure, man, You're screwed. That's like losing blood. You know, I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off, but I mean, there's like all this crazy shit that could go on, you know, with like, you know, oh man, we got a dead stick. You know, we can't do anything with the plane. We lost hydraulics. We can't do anything with the rudder. What do we do? You know, like, it's not like, I was on a train in Chicago and we came to a halt in like two in the morning in the middle of nowhere. We blew an engine. We really did, but we didn't fall 30,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had to wait 2 hours and you just sat there. You know, just sat down. Oh, we lost an engine. And you're like yawning, whatever. You know, and it's like, okay, we're going to be late. But it's not like, oh, but ladies and gentlemen, we lost an engine. Crash positions. Ah, like, what the hell, man? You're in a piece of tin, man. Like, I always envision like friggin' Cloverfield reaching up and just knocking us out of the sky, banging us into Godzilla who's going to knock us around. Actually, my one hypnotherapist, she made me come up with a happy place. I'm like, I don't have a fucking happy place. I'm thinking of Adam's Family House and shit. No, it's got to be a happy place. I'm like, okay, whatever. None of this shit's working. So I come up with an idea of like, okay, there's a friggin' garden. There's a bunny. And then I imagine the bunny being a giant, growing teeth and just taking a bite out of fuselage. And I'm like, well, screw it anyway. Freaking giant bunny attack while trying to land at Newark Airport. Sons of bitches.
Bill, you know, another thing that's great about airplane is when the stewardess says, okay, everybody, assume crash positions, and they just start splaying all over the place, basically.
And I yell, how about Billy Crash positions, huh?
Whoa, trademark. Yeah.
Who are you? Shut up. Listen to my show.
Well, you know, Bill, I think my problem with what I don't like about air travel is kind of being stuck in coach and... On the way to Iceland, it was like three seats, then an aisle, then another three seats on the other side. I was stuck in the middle, so I'm kind of like
stuck in the middle with you, Johnny.
Pretty much, and I don't know what I'm gonna do, Bill.
So you're not sitting next to Michael Madsen. You're okay.
No, he was a couple rows back. Yeah, I was keeping an eye on him. Yeah, but the thing is, I'm sort of like compacting myself, so I'm not like touching elbows or legs with the people next to me. So, it was for all intents and purposes like a red eye flight. I hardly slept. I took melatonin like right after I sat down, and I kept having these episodes where I was like close to nodding off but never nodded off. I just kept waking up. And I couldn't get the air conditioning to work, so I was like a sweating mess too. So It's more just like you're collapsed in that, you know, it's sort of like you said, it's a tin can, it's a sardine can.
Yeah, and you get everybody's cooties floating around, you know, and, you know, and which has led to some horror movies, you know, that's what they included, you know, you got patient zero for the zombie virus get on, and then you get, like, the movie Airborne, which is a piece of shit. You know, it's like, oh god, everybody's infected, what do we do? It's like, whatever, you know, it's just crap like that.
Yeah, and I was thinking the same thing. It's like, well, you can't really crack a window, you're just breathing in this recirculated air, you're breathing in whatever's in the cabin, basically. So
yeah,
it's not really, it's like, yeah, it's not too appealing. So my issues with air travel are more first world problems than
definitely
than actually having an actual fear of flying. But well, Bill, you know, I have some theories just in general as far as like the horror films in particular are concerned. Yeah. As to why maybe there aren't a lot of good ones, and perhaps where they, I don't know, where they go wrong, or why they don't come across as effectively as they could, especially to someone like you who, you know, who dislikes flying and would rather, you know, go by boat, you know, across the Atlantic to get to to get someplace. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be nice. You know, one of the things that I hate is so many of them get things wrong with how a plane functions, even. And that's where, like, you know, even in that stupid movie Flight Plan, you know, which is a mystery thriller, not necessarily a horror, although it's a horrible movie.
Yeah.
You know, she's down in the cargo hold, and it's like, that's not a cargo hold, like, for a plane. Like, what the hell is this? You know, it's like, it didn't match up. Like, World War Z, they did the same thing. They have, like, you know, just weird crap going on that doesn't really work. And so many people can travel by plane. And if you're making an American, a U.S.-based film, you know, where people may have traveled by plane, you know, they're going to know, like, this isn't really accurate. So that just takes away from the tension and all of it. It just ruins the damn thing. Even, like, with a crack in a window. You know, if you have a small crack in a window, is it going to be a problem? Yeah, but it's not necessary. It might not blow out. You know, it depends on the situation and the pool and the pressure and the height of the plane. And first of all, like, you know, they always show somebody, like, trying to open an emergency door in flight.
Yeah.
You can't do it. No matter how hard you try, you can't, because the pressure of the plane on the exterior of the plane, there's no way you could open that freaking door. No matter if you blow open the, you know, if you pull the lock system, you know, and you try to like nudge it, it's not going to open. You can't. There's no. You don't have a human being doesn't have the force to open up that stupid thing. Even in the dumb movie Air Force One, like, they have that platform where the guy jumps out with a parachute. Not on Air Force One going at the speeds it's going, buddy. That shit ain't gonna happen. Stupid freaking crap. I just hate it.
You know what? You know what, Bill? I agree. Air Force One is pretty. There are a lot of stupid airplane movies out there.
Yeah, except for Airplane and Airplane Two. You know, those.
They might be the smartest ones, actually.
Yeah, you know what? I'll take it.
The most truthful films about air travel are Airplane 1 and Airplane 2.
Yeah, because my list, like most of them, and I'll give you all the ones that are half stars. Half stars because I can't go any lower on IMDb.
Ooh.
Red Eye. It's so stupid. Flight Plan. And I know those two are mystery thrillers. But the movie Airborne. Quarantine 2 was so stupid. I was like, it was just awful.
I didn't even see that one.
And Snakes on a Plane, which is just... like all these different snakes, and it was funny because it wasn't even me. I didn't even do this, but people were like, hey, I own a snake, and if it was on a plane at that height, you know, with that cold and all, it like wouldn't even move. You know, it's like shit like that, you know. It's like,
you know, Bill, seriously, I, as a tangent, I think Snakes on a Plane is the reason we have this toxic fandom on the internet these days. It all started with when the makers of Snakes on a Plane embraced the internet culture, and we've only gotten worse ever since. So,
no, I understand, and I mean, the movie Altitude had its moments that I actually gave that 2 stars instead of a half. Like World War Z, they had their plane sequence, which they used as a platform, an actual early crash sequence that was a testing crash, and they incorporated that into the film, and they did it well with the computer generated images, but and it should have been a great movie, and they blew it, and I'm really ticked off to this day about it because of what they did and didn't do. But that was Final Destination.
Why don't you talk a little bit about that one, Bill? Because I didn't like that one either. I saw it in the theater and I hated it, and it was like the first, it was like the first time in my life where I was like, oh man, I saw something and I didn't like it, and then I looked at the reviews and everybody was like, oh, this is good, and I'm like, oh no, it's not. What's wrong with me? But anyway.
No, nothing's wrong with you at all. It was written by Glenn Morgan and James Wong, who were two of the very successful, well, they were two of the successful writers, but they were writing team from The X-Files. Yeah. And they created some great stuff. So I'm watching this movie, and, you know, if you don't understand what A Fear of Flying is, all you need to do is watch that first act with Devon Sawa doing his thing. They captured it so perfectly, I was on the verge of a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really captured the fear. And then after that, the movie became this stupid, ludicrous. Death has to do all these stupid, crazy, loopy tricks to try and kill you. He could have given everybody a heart attack if he wanted. You know, but they're like, oh no, the string's going to come down. And like everything was like a freaking Rube Goldberg device to try and like kill these people. And I'm like, this is stupid. But that first act was gold. And that's part of the only reason why it ended up earning like 2.5 stars from me. But, one and a half stars for me. It got a star just because of that whole first sequence. But other than that, the whole movie just went downhill. Although I'll take Final Destination 5 any day.
Yeah, I know you like that one.
I'll admit, I don't care. I love it.
Well, you know, Bill, the thing with Final Destination is I think that first sequence, probably you could have put that in an anthology show, like a half hour anthology show, and it would have been a solid little anthology segment. And great. then it just kept going, and I was like, I'm with you.
Took a nosedive.
Yeah, I thought that opening was effective, and that whole sequence. I mean, I still remember it, even though I haven't seen the movie in 18 years. But where it's like three or four people who got off the plane are in the terminal, which is like ominously empty. And then the plane explodes in the distance, and the explosion is so powerful that it shatters out the glass in the terminal.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's accurate, but that's pretty cool.
Well, my father was on many, many flights. He was a service technician for a company and that made packaging machinery. So he flew all over the country and parts of South America to repair equipment. And he would fly maybe 3 days out of each week. And he loved flying. And on one plane, they blew an engine, so they had to go back and land. And he got on another plane and took off. Another one, something happened, and the engine blew, and it did blow out glass in the terminal, you know, because it was just like all that pressure and that speed and that power and that force. I mean, you could watch videos of people on that one woman got killed recently. There's this, I think it's Martinique, maybe, in the Caribbean, where it lands over the beach and it comes right in for a landing, and you know, people are warned to like stay away, but they go up there anyway and they grab on the fence or the rail. And as the plane goes in for a landing, you know, it churns up all this wind, so people hang on to the rail and crap, and their bodies are flapping in the breeze. And the one woman, she lost her grip, and she ended up getting killed, you know, and blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
But, that, you know, stuff like that can happen. And we all know planes can, you know, unfortunately go down. And, because there's so many moving parts. And I mean, I know these people work like dogs to make sure that that plane isn't going to come out of that damn sky. But you know, sometimes you just like never know. It could be a bolt. It could be a crack that gets long, you know, bigger over time, depending on the age of the plane. And it goes on and on and on and on. And that's the scary part, because you don't know. The odds are that you're probably going to be safe, but you know, my dad, he had heart trouble at the end of his career, and the doctor said you can never fly again. And my dad said he was relieved, because he felt like his number was up, because he had flown so often for like decades.
Wow. Wow.
You know, he just thought it was like a matter of time, and I'm like, oh man. And
wow.
Yeah, so that was weird, but.
Well, Bill, you brought up some stuff about like the accuracy or inaccuracy of how, you know, airplane disasters are presented in film, like the contrivances, like the yes. Oh, that stuff wouldn't happen. Is that the only thing that bothers you? I guess let's bring it back to just like as something used in horror films.
Yeah.
Like what beyond that bothers you from a horror arena, I suppose, well, like in a trope sense,
yeah,
maybe?
No, great question, because one of the things that really pisses me off is a lot of these writers, when they have something on a plane, they're relying so much on the plane as a character, and not even they don't even set up the plane as a good character. Mm-hmm. It's just like it's such a contrivance, like you said. It's like this is they're exploiting a location, and their character development is usually poor in all of these films.
You
know, which really bothers me. And they're trying to like twist the story. Well, let's set it on a plane. Okay, but they don't study what a plane can and can't do a mm-hmm. lot of times, which really pisses me off because it would enhance their stories if they did. One of the things that I love as a writer is writing something and finding out, ooh, it doesn't work like that. And then usually I get a headache because it's like, well, now my story's out the window. But but how can I make the story work within the reality of location or, you know, whatever type of situation that's happening, you know? And that's what I like. But a lot of these, you know, writers, they don't care. They don't study a plane. Oh, it's a plane. Okay. I remember one of those airport disaster films from the 70s and early 80s. The yep. one was so stupid. And I was a kid and I even knew it. The plane crash landed in the water, but it landed safely on the bottom. And it had and all the people were trapped in this plane running out of oxygen. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, with the water pressure and like nothing, it was just so stupid. It was like, this isn't gonna happen. My dad, yeah. I remember, I think he was like puking on a carpet, like, this is so stupid, you know. And they're like, the pressure, blah, blah, yeah, like all this crap. And it was just, and any plane that hits the water, it's getting damaged. It's like you have to, like, you know, like hover land on it or something, and then you're gonna get hit by a wave anyway, probably. Or, you know, we've seen crash landings in the water, and, you know, that wonderful landing that, you know, in the Hudson River, you know, that was awesome, but that's mm-hmm. rare. It's just, you know, it's so difficult with the engines. You know, you have to have the plane perfectly level. You have to hope that the current and wind and whatnot is in your favor and that it's not choppy. And it's like, oh my God, so many variables. And that's right. why that, you know, that became a freaking movie in itself, but not just because the pilot was awesome and nobody got killed, but because it's so rare.
Yeah.
That one poor pilot, you see him coming down. He ran out of gas. He had terrorists on a plane. He did his damnedest to land that plane in the ocean, and he still like got turned up, and, you know, people drowned. And it wasn't his fault. He saved so many damn lives.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, come on, just freaking do it right. You know, it just pisses me off.
Well, Bill, I guess, yeah, and I think in some ways, you know, we've mentioned Airplane more than once already on this show. And so are you thinking, like, if a film maybe goes more towards the ridiculous with like, the notion of air travel? Like, I have another example. It's not a
horror film.
I have
another
one,
too. Yep, go ahead.
But I'm getting slightly closer to horror. It's the it's the late 90s film Turbulence with Lauren Holly.
Oh, I love Lauren Holly. Oh, she's hyper delicious, man.
Did you see Turbulence, Bill?
I'm trying to see right now because I want it now just because she's in it. Oh my God, Ray Liotta's in it.
Yeah, Ray Liotta's the bad guy.
Yeah, really, I couldn't have guessed. No, I didn't see.
You're really funny, Bill.
Oh my God, Hector Elizondo's in it. Holy shit.
Brendan Gleeson too.
Catherine Hicks, man. Yeah,
oh,
Brendan
yeah,
Gleeson.
She's in it too. Yeah.
Oh man. No, I didn't see this one.
You know, it's a totally ridiculous film, but it's a lot of fun to watch, you know.
Callie Thorne's in it. Holy shit.
It totally takes, like, it logic was not high on the filmmaker's list of priorities with that movie, but it was
most action thrillers aren't. That's the problem.
So I don't know if you would like it more or less than something like Air Force One, which is slightly serious, I feel, about, you know.
I couldn't watch it because of the coming distractions. As soon as I saw them lowering that, like, platform and the guy jumping, you know, trying to jump out with a parachute, I'm like, what the fuck is this shit?
Stupid. I just remember a lot of, I just remember a bad CGI crash at the end of that film. But, you know, Bill, I guess what we're kind of talking about is how horror films, they have all this potential, or even something that's a thriller for that matter, it has a lot of potential to capitalize and exploit that fear that people have of flying. You know, a really good movie should have you, you know, on on the edge of your seat, even if you're in the safety of your living room or just a movie theater. You know, you should be, even if you don't have a fear of flying, you should be feeling that fear coming through via the movie. And more often than not, it's not the case. More often than not, I know I'm sitting there saying, "Ah, oh, geez, it's just a set. The world outside is CGI. I don't give a crap." You know, it's kind of that problem. And I think with horror in particular, Bill, sometimes I think, like, due to the low budget of horror films, they either avoid the airplane as a setting,
right,
or it's just briefly, you know, it's just something that's introduced as like a plot catalyst, kind of like I mentioned before. It's like, oh, it starts on a plane, but the plane, obviously it goes down, and then it turns into like a land or sea based adventure from there, kind of.
Yeah.
So that those were kind of like the two paths I was thinking of as to maybe why airplanes don't seem to be as prominent in horror films, at least horror films of a certain budgetary limitation.
Well, here's another movie that is it's an animation, and it's an action, and it's a comedy, and I love it. I gave it 5 stars out of 5.
What?
Yep, The Incredibles from 2004. There's actually a sequence where Holly Hunter's character, Helen, you know, who's Elastigirl, she's flying a plane because she can fly. And there's this interchange going on between her and a tower about what she can and can't do. And I'm listening to it, and I'm like, this is really good. This is really real. And then I heard all of these pilots saying that was one of the very few movies that got it right. About how pilots and the cockpit, in the cockpit talk to the tower. And I, you know, because I listened to enough, like I said, I watched like every airplane crash documentary ever, why planes crash, what happened here, there, and everything else, to like hear a lot of voice recordings, voice tape recordings, and from the black box, which is actually orange, of course. And and I'm like, man, that's really accurate. And it was. I mean, so like when she's giving like her position and this and that and what she can't do and her requests, it's like just solid gold.
Isn't she also like fighting with some henchmen like simultaneously while she's flying the plane? It's been a while since I've seen it.
She might have, because she's awesome. She's Holly Hunter, she's Elastigirl, and I love Holly Hunter too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh man.
So okay. This is interesting, Bill.
It's weird. It's just the horror, you know, people like hasn't been a good horror movie in a plane for real, except
yeah,
there is one I like, but it's a segment. It's an anthology.
Oh, I know what you're going to say. I do think it's the best one probably that I can think of. Yeah.
Really? We're talking Twilight Zone, right?
Yeah, are we talking the movie?
Yep, the movie, 1983.
Yep.
The George Miller sequence, the man who brought you Mad Max, and many other great things. It's a great sequence where they're, you know, redoing the William Shatner starred event from the Twilight Zone television series.
Yep.
With a gremlin on the wing. And from what I understand, my buddy Rob, who frequents Banter's Hard Cider in Stroudsburg, PA,
Banter's!
And Rob is so damn cool. Rob needs to go on frickin', whatchamacallit, he needs to go on...
Jeopardy,
man. He said the original sequence was supposed to call for like a a bipedal, like, human-based thing that was blackened out but had, like, lights along the edges of the body. And they, you know, they couldn't afford that, so they put him in, like, this teddy bear suit. And it looks just really stupid.
It does, yeah.
It's just really stupid. And I always enjoyed the story in regard to, you know, hey, there's something out there, and, you know, a gremlin, yeah, you know. But I thought they really did it beautifully in the movie, and I thought the ending was excellent, and that's Dan Aykroyd.
No, it's John Lithgow.
It's John Lithgow, yes.
Oh, no. Dan Aykroyd's driving the ambulance.
He's driving, right.
Yeah, John Lithgow is the passenger on the plane.
Right. And it was just really, really well done, and it was creepy and very cool about somebody who's had a breakdown. They just got out. They're feeling better. And they have to take this flight, and it's oh my God, it's Nightmare at 20,000 feet. And yeah. What happens is he's sitting on the wing, and he looks out the window, and he sees a gremlin trying to rip up the plane, you know, and he's like trying to get the attention of the flight crew, and of course you know where that's going. And then, you know, the plane makes it down, and then people are looking at the wing, and it's all ripped up, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, but that was the only one that was really cool, because you had a character that you could, that you rooted for. You had a solid story that used the plane as a character in a excellent manner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had a flight crew that was wonderful, because it's like, okay, this guy's nuts. I have to worry about all these other passengers. You know, what are we going to do to get this guy to, like, chill out? And I thought it was great. You know, it was just the tension, the rising tension, the suspense of, yeah, this guy was nuts, but it's like he's really seeing this shit. You know, so it was like, you know, and his wife's on a plane, honey, calm down, you know. And it was just, it was the only one that I've seen that, you know, really rocked, plane-wise.
Yeah, you know what, Bill, there's... You know, there's so much good about the, you know, I think when people, because people still make that tired argument that, oh, you know, no remake can be better than the original. I think if you want to see a remake that's better than the original, just check out that segment of the Twilight Zone movie and you'll see, like, how much Miller essentially does it like Mad Max in an airplane, basically. He amps it's up to 11, basically, because it's, everything is amplified. The gremlin is scarier.
Oh, hell yeah.
And, you know, there's more characters in you know, you
yes.
There are these little character details, and Richard Matheson wrote the scripts for both.
Yes, he's just amazing.
Yeah, and you know what? There are all these little character moments, like with a guy who's like a cop on the plane, or he's a marshal or something. There's this obnoxious little girl taking Polaroids of people.
Mm-hmm.
There's this stewardess who's trying to be sympathetic, but John Lithgow is freaking out. He's pale. He's sweating. He's terrified even before the gremlin shows up.
He's so awesome in that too, man.
Oh, yeah. No one can play crazy quite like John Lithgow. It's like you don't like him. You know, you don't like him at points in that segment because he's so like, it's like, you know, it's like part of you is like, just chill the fuck out. And then part of you is like, he's like right on the money. That's how I'd be reacting if I saw something tearing up the fucking wing of the plane.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the damage to the plane is like 10 times more brutal than it was in the original, where you just like see a little piece of the wing kind of lifted up. Here it's like
studio money.
Yeah, but it works so well. It's like,
it
you know, you
it's said, awesome.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, Hollywood ruins everything. I think they did a great job. You know, that's an uneven film overall.
Totally. That's my favorite segment.
Yeah, and it's definitely the highest quality. I think everything comes together in that one so well. And it's like, you know what? Miller makes it feel like you're, you know, oh my God, this plane is fucked, basically. If it's not fucked by the gremlin, it's fucked by this crazy guy who's trying to get out to shoot the gremlin or something, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like choose your fate. It's like choose your fate, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very powerful. That was the only one of all the horror crap, and it is crap for this bizarre subgenre.
Yeah.
That was the only one I really enjoyed. Like, I know some people are probably talk about the Langoliers.
Well, you know what, Phil? I was going to bring it up only insofar as when I first saw it and I watched it both nights when it aired as a miniseries in 1995. I really liked it, but I think if I went back and watched it, I have it on DVD, but I think if I went back and watched it now, I'd be disappointed because those special effects weren't very good even for the time.
Special defects.
Those exterior shots of the plane and the Langoliers themselves are like, yeah. That's early CGI. That's not, yeah. But the cool thing about that movie, I gotta say, is you got some cool character actors like David Morse as the pilot.
Excellent. He's just great.
And that was before he became, you know, like he did the Green Mile and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
And, you know, I thought Bronson Pinchot, that was kind of like his star was kind of on the way down, but I thought he was great as the crazy guy on the plane.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dean Stockwell, of course.
Yes. Yeah, he was good.
Oh, man. Yeah, totally. And Tom Holland.
Yeah, yeah. Child's Play and Fright Night.
Yep. He directed it, and he's also in it. He co-wrote it with Stephen King.
No, I think he wrote it himself. I think he adapted it himself.
What the hell is that?
Let me see. Well, I mean, King made a cameo in it, but
yeah, he did. He did make a cameo.
It's the chairman of the board.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, I love the whole thing with a mystery plane and stuff, and you know, Twilight Zone did that several times in the regular series.
Right. Odyssey of Flight 33.
Yep, absolutely. And my favorite, you know, Room for One More. What was that one? That was the line. Room for one. There's room for one more, honey.
Isn't that an elevator, though, Bill?
No. It was okay. The woman in the hospital, and she sees all these bodies in the morgue, and it's great. They filmed it in Cinescope, so it does. I forgot the title of that one. Damn it.
Wait. When's it from, Bill? Like, what's the era?
This is the original Twilight Zone series.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Yeah, I don't know that one.
I'm gonna find it right now. It's excellent. It's one of my favorites, actually. What was that? What is that one called? 22, I believe it is. I think it's called 22 or Passenger 22. So, no, just 22. Yeah. And it's great. It's about a woman. She's in a hospital. And you know, she has to make this flight, and she, you know, dreams of herself being in a morgue, and there's a morgue attendant there who's like, there's room for one more, honey. And you know, she ends up you know, getting out of the hospital, going to take her flight, and she gets to the door, and the flight attendant is
the Grim Reaper.
No, the flight attendant is the woman from the morgue saying, room for one more, honey. And she's like, ah, and she gets out and the plane takes off and... So it was a warning from the cosmos.
Well, you know, Bill, there's you know, the reason I was asking you, I was thinking you were talking about something else, but, you know, there's a movie that's actually really good. I haven't watched it in a while, but it's a movie that's stuck with me. It's called Soul Survivor from the early 80s. And it's from the guy who directed Night of the Comet, Tom Eberhardt.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, the two movies are extremely different. And Soul Survivor is about a person who is the only survivor of a plane crash. And after she tries to put her life back together, she finds herself kind of followed by, you know, the dead. And it's very much like a Carnival of Souls kind of thing.
Right.
And it doesn't. It's very eerie. It's more eerie than gory. So I think that's a film that uses the notion of a plane crash, or, you know, a plane as a catalyst into something mysterious, very well. Even though I haven't watched it in a while.
Which one? That wasn't the one with Melissa Sage Miller and Eliza Dushku, was it? Soul Survivors.
No. It's just Soul Survivor.
Gotcha.
I'm trying to find the year on it, but I can't.
No, that's right.
It was like from, I think,
SOLE.
Yeah, I think it was like from 82 or 83. SOLE Survivor. Yeah.
Gotcha. With Anita Skinner.
Yes. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I like that one. I gave it 3 stars.
Oh, okay. You saw that one then?
Oh, yeah, obviously.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know about you sometimes, but
oh, how dare you!
I don't know. Well, you know. A film, and this is another entry in an anthology, and it's interesting because it kind of goes against the types of uses of airplanes in horror films, I guess. The plane doesn't go down and they don't stay in the plane the whole movie. And it's a segment from Masters of Horror, the Screwfly Solution.
Right.
And the whole thing with that episode, directed by Joe Dante, was that something's happening to the men of the, the men in America, and
Right.
they're confusing the sex drive with homicide. Every time a guy gets horny, he's taking it out and trying to kill a woman or killing a woman. And there's this scene where Jason Priestley, who plays a scientist, he's in this plane getting ready to go back home to his family, but this virus or whatever has been spreading, and there are guys like on the plane who are
Yeah,
there
yeah,
that
yeah.
we see one guy who's just like killed a woman in the bathroom, and then this male flight attendant comes up and like snaps the neck of a woman who's like freaking out. And it just kind of ends there, and I kind of like that tension. That's Dante was like, I feel like he was trying to get it made as a feature film for years, but no one wanted to go near it. And he was like, oh yeah, I think Masters of Horror was like the best thing because I could do it in an hour. But watching it, I kind of feel like they could still do a feature version of it, especially today with I guess the, I don't know, the sexual climate as it is, kind
Yeah,
of.
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So,
Oh, man.
but, yeah. So, Bill, there really aren't, I feel like there really aren't a lot of good airplane, horror films.
No, there aren't at all. And I think they all suck. I haven't seen every single one. There's probably about 10 I missed. And they all have suck written all over them anyway.
You suck, suck.
Yeah, it's just, you could just tell by looking at them, this is going to be crap, and it is really hard to shoot in a plane, and you do need a lot of money. I mean, there's planes that you could film on, of course, but you want big bucks to do it right, and that means segmentation of the plane and this and that, but still, you're gonna have flight sequences. It's not like, airport and Airport 77 where you're gonna have models in the sky, or any crap like that. It's just gonna take a lot of work, but you need to do it right and be cool about it, it's just used and abused, except for George Miller's segment, I think, which is the best of the entire bunch from the Twilight Zone movie in '83. The Kick the Can episode is just weak as crap. I never liked it. And
Oh, yeah.
the one with Vic Morrow where he gets killed, with the two little kids, because the Huey helicopter, crashes down on him, and that changed movie making forever.
Yeah,
That's
that's.
yeah. And that was a helicopter crash, so that's it's still a flying thing, but that was just awful. And
Yeah, it's kind of cast a permanent shadow over that segment forever, so.
yeah, and it's just, they did the money shot not at the very end, and nobody thought something would happen. Nobody thought that with the because you could watch the actual accident. You don't see Vic Morrow getting decapitated, or but you could see the kid, him and carrying the two Vietnamese children, and getting they're just gone. The helicopter falls on top of them, and it's just like, that's it. And that changed not only with how special effects are done in regards to something that's flying, but also with, children, and with SAG-AFTRA, making sure that the kids are okay, and when you could have them on set and not, and like all this other crap. But there was a court case for manslaughter, and it just got really, really awful. And
Well, to bring it back around, Bill, I actually liked actually this is another Joe Dante. I liked his segment "It's a Good Life," which was based off the Billy
Yes.
Mumy
Yep.
episode of The Twilight Zone, where he's the kid with the special powers who's keeping random
That was good.
random people imprisoned in this house of horrors, basically.
Oh yeah. Everything's fine. Everything's great. And I'm like, you're going to cornfield. No, I Yeah, that's
Another
messed up, man. That was.
birthday with presents.
Yeah, and that was just that was really cool. That was a cool. Those two episodes were great, and the rest were like, why did they pick these? There were so many other phenomenal episodes that they could have chosen that would have just really, really rocked. And he didn't.
Yeah, that's true, Bill. And it wasn't. I'm not a, I complain kind of about modern anthologies that don't try to stitch the stories together at all. It's just like, we just slapped a couple short films together and passed it off as a feature, because that seems very lazy to me. That film is kind of guilty of the same thing, even though there is there's a bookend story with the Dan Aykroyd character. But it's not very strong, honestly.
Albert Brooks is in there too, yeah.
At the beginning, yeah. But then, it's just kind of like they just transition into each other, and I don't know.
Yeah, and Kick the Can, yes, I never liked the episode. I know what you're doing, and I get it, but it was just like, that's not, like, they could have done The Invaders again, with Agnes Moorehead's, wonderful segment, or, Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up, which is like, they're two fucking brilliant segments, and it's like, if you're going to spend all this money doing this other stuff, like the Billy Mumy episode, which was great, and... Yeah. It like pissed me off.
Yeah, Bill, you're so right. There were so many segments to choose from, and the one with Vic Morra was actually specifically written for the film as a new, obviously, they didn't do an episode where he's, tossing out racial slurs in the 50s, but
Right.
But Yeah, it ultimately it has that affliction of the anthology film. You might have like one or two, like a one really strong segment, then like an okay segment, and then the rest is like negligible, kind of.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know, man. But so half the movie's good. That's pretty much what it comes down to, and I think that's why I gave it, 2.5 stars, just for that.
Two and a half. Yeah, then it's frustrating because it's like, do you grade it by segment or do you grade it by the whole film? But yeah, you kind of got to give it an overall score. Yeah.
What was funny, and this is a true story, because we're talking about my dad and his flying. He went down to Mexico. I think he was down in Brazil right after the movie, and right after the death of Vic Morrow and stuff. And he went down and he was with these workers, and he was talking about the movie came up, he was talking about Vic Morrow, and they didn't know Vic Morrow had passed away. And they were all like, Vic Morrow fans, because Vic Morrow was cool as hell, And they were like, oh no, Senor Morrow, Muerta. And my dad was like, oh no. He felt so bad, He's like, well, yeah. Actually, no. Must have been Venezuela, actually, because I'm not speaking Portuguese. I know my dad said he was speaking Spanish with them, because my dad taught himself Spanish, which was cool. So that was I remember that. That was a bad day in 1980. I think they were filming that in 82 or 83. And it was released in the summer of 83. But that was landmark. I mean, John Landis, he was like, holy shit, he might be going to jail for manslaughter. It was just like really, really heavy. Like Hollywood was like, you're not in control anymore,
Well, and I know a lot of people, and it still comes up like on social media and stuff, and then people writing articles, people still have not forgiven him for that, It's like, people still see him as, oh yeah, you're responsible for those people getting killed on that.
Wow.
On that set. Yeah,
Well,
so, I don't know how I feel about that,
I think I wish somebody would do a documentary on that. Because it's really big. It's important for, how the industry changed, how Hollywood was no longer like the king of its own domain type of thing. In the past where Hollywood could control stuff. I mean, that was big crap, man. I remember the look on John Landis's face, before court was like, he was scared shitless. And so were, some of the other people and the producers. And it's like, well, who do you blame? The stunt coordinator? The pilots? The list goes on, but... anybody? Is it just an accident? If they weren't doing anything different from how things were done in the past, was it really bad planning? I mean, the list goes on, I don't know.
Hey, Bill, I got one last movie to throw it up here. Have you seen the movie Scarecrows, Bill?
Scarecrow? Wait, I think I did. You throw it up. Well, I got my air bag, my sick bag, my air sick bag ready. Scarecrows, huh? We look this.
We've got high hopes. We've got high hopes.
Oh my! The one from '88 with Ted Vernon. Yes.
Yeah, the William Wesley film.
I didn't see that one.
Well, it's worth mentioning, and sure. just because it uses the airplane as a catalyst to get the plot going, it starts off on an airplane. It's obviously like a low-budget film from the get-go.
There was a gecko in it?
Well, not Geico, Bill.
Johnny.
Anyway.
Whatever.
But it's. I think you would get a kick out of it. You'd be going crazy because it's some mercenaries who've ripped off. I forget how the plot goes. It's been a couple of years since I've watched it, but this group of like mercenary types have ripped off a large sum of money, and one guy is trying to make off with all of it, like jump off the plane.
Yeah, yeah.
And he tosses a grenade. And it's hilarious because the grenade just keeps kind of rolling around for at least a minute or two before a couple people get off the plane too, and the plane blows up. But all these, you know, this group of people are left sort of stranded in this sort of seemingly endless acreage of cornfield with all these scarecrows hanging around who turn out to be. Some sort of they come alive and they start to stalk and kill people.
Wow, I gotta see that, man.
You know, I don't think it's a bad movie. Like I said, it's been a couple years, but I remember it being pretty effective the last time I watched it.
I'm sure Palco's listening right now going, oh, I love that movie. He's got it on VHS. I know he's got to, man.
Yeah, you know what, seriously, I could see this being a Palco film. Yep. And I could see him like actually having a replica of one of the scarecrows in his place.
Yeah, oh man, and that's Palco Designs for all your horror graphic needs.
Bill, are we touching down for some scream outs now?
Oh, we are. We're going to coast right into our special hangar here that has certain personnel that we're going to mention right now, my friend.
I'm going to lock the gate and release the boars, Bill. Or is it just boar? Or are we boars?
I hope not. Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. These are wonderful people that you could follow on Twitter. We love them. And I'm taking a sip of a nice seltzer right now. Hold on. And I'm still going to fuck it up. Anyway, here we go. Our first scream out on Twitter is one, the number one, Unnatural Soul. Who is that? That is the heart of Jennifer. And Jennifer is amazing. Follow her. She loves scary stuff. You know, Big Bald Head. We all know who that is. And if you don't know who WWW Big Bald Head is, that's... who is it, Johnny? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't watch that show, Bill.
You don't watch Norman Reedus doing his thing?
I know it's Norman Reedus.
Yeah, and she's out of Santa Monica, and we love her to death. She's amazing, and she's been following the show since almost the beginning.
Holy shit, that's awesome.
Yeah, 12 Night Horror, and that is really for 12 Nights of Horror. Yes. And they have a new logo, so you can check that out. It's awesome. They also are the people behind 12 Days of Movies. You can follow them on Instagram as well, and also on their website, 12, the number 12, of course, nightsofhorror.com. And where are they? They're lurking in the dark. Lisa Sorrentino, who is she? That is My Little Rascal 8. And they're a hubby and wife team making indie films, and they have one coming out soon called It's Killer, right, Johnny?
Yes. It is Killer. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're out of Lancaster, PA. We got to see them. We got to meet up with these people. And you can follow them on Facebook as well under My Little Rascal 8. And we talked about her before, and this is the lovely, the vivacious Denise Gossett, two S's, two T's. She's an actress in Get the Gringo. And I Saw the Light, The Office, New Adventures of Old Christine, Veronica Mars. You can check out her reel on IMDb, her demo reel. And, of course, she is the festival director of Shriekfest. So don't miss that. It's phenomenal for horror. And, again, check her out on imdb.com. An absolutely beautiful soul.
Holy shit, Bill. I'm actually rewatching The Office. I'll have to see which one she was on.
Yeah, she's fantastic. Check out her acting reel. She's just – she could do it all, comedy, drama, the whole nine yards. She's just so wonderful and giving, and she really has the chops, and she's so cool. Shriekfest is what an excellent festival it is. It's just phenomenal. She makes everybody feel like $1 million, and she deserves the best. By Horror. Who's that? They're movie horror for web friends, and you could just tag them with By Horror. And go to buyhorror.com to check out more about their site. Awesome. The lovely, the vivacious, the absolutely confidence-inducing dancer, actress, burlesque queen and star, Kat Lacohe. And that's L-A-C-O-H-I-E. She's a British actress based in Los Angeles, sometimes disguised as the dangerously seductive and Eddie Izzard-esque variety performer Vixen DeVille. And you could go to vixendeville.com or katlacohe.com, see what she's all about. What, oh man, what an amazing persona. Fang the Jester. And he's Fang the Demented Clown. He writes articles and reviews mainstream and independent horror films for EmeraldGoreSociety.com. You could also follow him on Facebook.com as Fang the Jester. The wonderful, the engaging, a wonderful writer, very insightful. Susan on the Ledge, who's that? That's Susan Layton. And she's a writer girl, and she's a tequila expert. So how's that? You can find her stuff at 1428_Elm on Twitter. As well as content_podcast on Twitter, Nerdrotics, also at IMDb, and Convergen, which is Instagram. And let's see what else. She's a podcaster, writer. She's in the television and movies. And follow her on Facebook at Susan-Layton. Two more. The great A Fiend on Film. And that's the, I know you always laugh, the social media page for Dave K. He's in the horror, indie films, noir, art, graphic, design, punk, architecture, photos. Go to magnificentworldofdavek.wordpress.com. And also you could go to his page and check out his movie, his first short film, Death Comes Twice, starring his daughter. And check it out. It's a blast. Hope you enjoy it. And finally, Hello Darkness. Who's that? That's Shadow Next Edge. That's it. NEX Edge. And he is a SCTV retro monster movie, sci-fi, Godzilla Space 1999, creepy horror guitarist, UFO. And he's a parody. I own nothing. He's a veteran of 1,000 psychic wars. And he's married and no. What does that all mean? Check him out. He's a blast every day. And that's all you need to know. Shadow Next, NEX Edge. There you go, Johnny. We have landed safely. So where can people find you, man?
Bill, you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies, and you'll tell them where else they can find me. Where can people find you?
They could find me on the tarmac, misdirecting planes, at crashpalaceproductions.com, where you'll find links to this show as well as wonderful articles. And also on Twitter at Crash Palace. On Instagram is Billy Crash. And finally, go to Redbubble for merchandise if you want it for The Last Knock and also Crash Palace. The logo designs are new and are from the great Paul Belci. And you can see him on LinkedIn. And that's B-E-L-C-I. He's a wonderful graphic designer as well. And he's a great freelancer. So check him out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Bill, you know what? I'm the inflatable captain, and I'm giving you a salute and a wink right now.
Well, Otto. yeah, you didn't think I knew that.
You know, it sounds shameful, Bill, but I envied the moves Otto was making on Julie Haggerty.
Yeah, oh man, and her hair. Oh my god. And you know what? I picked the wrong day to quit sniffing glue. So anyway, on that note,
it's a good thing he doesn't know how much you hate his guts.
I'm sorry, Johnny, I only speak jive. If you haven't
Jews for Jesus, Jehovah's Witness.
If you haven't seen Airplane, you are missing out on one of the greatest comedy films of all friggin' time.
We need to do a show on Airplane.
Shit, I think we just did.
That'll be our 300th episode. We're just going to talk about Airplane.
Yeah, well, I'm calling an Uber and I'm getting out of here, Johnny.
Sounds good, Bill. I'm just going to hop in a car like Tyler Durden and drive off.
Off to make human soap. Soap out of humans. Go ahead.
It's not your dildo, Bill.
Ho! Anyway, good night.
Good night.